quando era con tutti i legni, con te più, allora qui c'è, con te più, una volta sta con, una volta chi viene, mi dà la sua, una volta mi dà.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, my colleagues. Thank you for the presentation you gave to us. My name is Nomuso Nandongeni. I'm sorry to be late. Okay, I have a question for Stantec and ICASA and USASA. You can answer. How does the digital migration empower your community? What have you done to achieve this? This question is going to SAPO. How are we going to manage the numbers of people who will be coming to the post office? Have you trained people to assist people, especially the elderly people? Thank you, Chairman.
Never make that mistake again.
Promises, promises.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the presenters, especially those who come from upcountry to present. It was really illuminating, the presentation, and if I was to take the presentation on face value, I could sleep at night and rest assured that we were going to reach our deadline of the 15th of June, I believe, June 2015, for the switch on. That said, let me ask a couple of questions. In fact, if I could just pose my questions generally, and if you can assist me with clarity from any department or any area, I'd appreciate it. Firstly, in the department's presentation, you talk of a launch of a massive public awareness campaign in collaboration with all relevant stakeholders and government agencies. I know of at least one of these massive campaigns that was done a number of years ago at great cost. So my question is this, what sort of amount do you have in mind to put behind this? What sort of companies do you intend to use, and have you budgeted for this? And if so, in this coming financial year, have you budgeted for this? And if so, how much? Secondly, that's on the poor households. Let me just clarify that. In terms of the poor, parentheses, TV-owning households, have you factored in the question of South African citizens? Are we drawing any distinction between the services that we're offering and the services the taxpayer is going to pay for to South African and non-South African citizens or illegal immigrants into the country? Does this apply to them as well, or are we going to have a massive switch off of people who own TVs but are here illegally? That's just to the department. Also in the department's concluding remarks, you talk about the dual illumination period. I would hate to echo the Honourable Killian's comment about politicians being stupid. We're not stupid, we're more simple. Neither Afrikaans is simple, but more uncomplicated people. Dual illumination period would be the analogue and the digital signal transmitted simultaneously. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I think, just judging by the post office's presentation, it seems to be that this will be for a 3-year period. Now, if that's in terms of the rollout of boxes, because the minister has committed and the government has committed that nobody's going to be deprived of a television service. So if we have this, if we accept that it's a 3-year illumination period, after June 15, our analog signal will not be protected. And again, I'm uncomplicating that. Does that mean then, in terms of our analog signal, that, for example, a new government in Lesotho, or a government in Lesotho, set up a TV station, let transmit on our analog signal into our country? And again, please explain this to me, because perhaps I don't understand clearly. During that period that we actually have analog signals flighting in our country, and if that period is 3 years. That's on that side. Then the main body, just bear with me, please. In terms of the
set-up, five questions, then we can do that on.
Only five.
Yeah. So much of five.
But it's more clarity seeking, you know.
Well,
okay, let me see. I've got about three matters, about two and a half. Two and a half. In terms of the post office's value chain, I did speak earlier in the committee about the interruptions to postal services, and I'm a great admirer of the post office delivering whatever it takes. Do you have a contingency plan in the event that there are disruptions in terms of strikes, or labour unrest, or post offices burning down, or warehouses burning down, or any kind of that sort of thing? Do you have a contingency plan in place, and if so, what is it? Thank you. My last in conclusion. In terms of your system design readiness, I heard, I think it was Centec, correct me if I'm wrong, was talking about a SAP system, getting approval for a SAP system. I have experience in the city of Johannesburg with a SAP system, and I know how many years it can take to roll this thing out and how very, very costly it can become. Is the post office running a SAP system, and will you be having links into that? That would be my first question. Are you building those links in and then testing them? And also, just to echo my colleague, how many languages will your marketing material be made available to, bearing in mind that we are addressing the poorest of the poor? How many languages and how much assistance will be rendered to people who clearly need assistance? I can't set up my own decoder, so I'm
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have very, very many questions, and I'll try and focus them. My first one is the delay in the policy. My understanding is that the policy revision was ready in April, and it's now the end of September. What is the delay in rolling this out, in getting this through the cabinet process? Because I understand that the adjustment was minor. And what has the department actually done any sort of impact assessment of the delay of this policy rollout? My next one is on the tenders. Presumably we get the specs out so we can get some tenders going. I see that ISASA has appointed a couple of people already who are going to adjudicate the bids. Then there's going to be someone who's going to audit the evaluation. Then there's going to be a service provider to assist in managing the overall implementation of the study process. First of all, how are those people appointed? Who are they? That's the external service provider, the external audit firm, and the external service provider on the overall implementation. Who are these people? How are they appointed? And what are they going to cost? Then there's this funding of the SAP system, which you're asking for National Treasury to approve the funding for that. What is the cost of this, and what is the implementation plan of this SAP system? Because this isn't just a plug-and-play computer system. It's going to take a couple of years to get that up and running, assuming you get the costs for that. Then the installers. People who are going to install these in the houses, how are they being identified? Who's employing them? Who's going to train? You said they're going to be trained at the FET colleges. Who's paying for all of this? Who is paying the cost of either the recruitment process? What criteria are there for recruitment? Who's going to pay for the training? And who's going to actually employ them? Who's going to actually pay their salary check to install? And is there any kind of long-term contract for them to be around for any maintenance or support of the households they've installed at some later stage? Then I want to know, please, the total cost of this program. Has anybody actually worked it out? Because we have here that you're wanting an extra, what, 2 billion rand. That's just for the gadgets. Has anyone else actually factored into the cost of the SAP program, the training, all the rest of these things? Because, I mean, we're talking about a program that's gone up, doubled, and I think probably more than that since it was first launched. And that's just on the very basics. So to me, there's an awful lot of other hidden costs that I haven't even thought about identifying yet that will come up. And yes, the... what does Danua about to do to question number five? All right, but basically I want whether we actually understand, have any idea of the costs of this program, and whether it actually wouldn't be worthwhile at some stage, or perhaps saying it might just be simpler to wait another year and just give everybody integrated TV sets at a discount price. I don't know. To me, the cost and the time frame of rolling this out is horrendous, because I think we're 5 years away from, at best, of saying that we've gone digital. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is on the department. I just want the department to explain in detail what happened to the digital blogger. I think that was a very progressive commitment from the department to make sure that our people don't feel this thing of by 2015 will be no longer having TVs. And if it's not there, what the implications, why was it dissolved if it's no longer there? And then on ICASA, I just want to know if you said, the presenter said ICASA is open for channel authorization. Does the people out there know that what methods are on place to make sure that it's only known, not known by us, even the community that we are talking with about the channel authorization? And then on, I don't know if it's ICASA or what. you are talking about from 0 to 1,500. I just want to know that are you basically meaning that if a person gets a grant, let me say an old pensioner or a person who's depending on grants for children, are you taking those people? Because I think grant is not an income. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Captain, also welcoming all the presentations. And that was the very first one of the department, which is actually a straightforward, especially on preparatory work that is underway. If we can have more information on the actual time frame of the preparatory work, that's even ever in the process of oversight on the side of the community. And on collaborating with industries and also leading SAP colleges, which colleges have we identified as pilots. And the other one of disruptions, I think, the King's hinted on it, but I would like to also have a question on it as well. That do you anticipate some form of disruption, I mean, in the process of the fusion of getting into the new system? On ICASA, about the regional public consultation, which priorities have you prioritized for the consultation and the duration of the consultation as well? Coming to the value chain and the tender process, where you identify your own appointments, your own, etc. You know, in any process of tendering, one way or the other, there are people who give you tender and grant. Is there a mechanism in place to work or give you granting so that you do not compromise local manufacturers with
events doesn't happen according to the plan of government, on our side it will be a failure to deliver that we are going to deliver in terms of not promoting local content. The one on position of application by SAFO, how long does it take to process an application, minimum and maximum period to do the processing of the application? Question 5.
Thank you, Chair. I can see you really monitoring. Thank you, Chair, and sorry that I missed other presentations. But on the department, the issue of the recording, you see that it was supposed to be April, it's now September, understanding also that it's a new minister. And seems that the minister is asking the committee to be patient while he's processing the finalization of the policy. How much patience does the minister require from us? And so that you can oversight that and track it. And also on the launch of the master powerness, as Honourable Mackenzie has touched on it, but I think it mustn't be a once-off. And all sorts of avenues, media, it's going to use media to be explored. Because, for instance, if you're saying it's on the Lisan something, just an example, there are people who buy the Lisan also on Friday because there's a funeral arrangement. So I think it must go on a massive scale, especially around people in the rural areas. And yeah, so probably the question more is that how do you intend to do this? My third question, Chair, is on the commencement. Slide 6 says the commencement of the procurement of the central sports by the SASA. So when is this commencement? And because for me, it should have started. If the date, targeted date is June 2015, the procurement should have started now, so that then we don't have titles at the end. And in doing that, must ensure that we're not falling short. And I just wanted to know, are we piloting this first, or just rolling out according to your plan? And if it's a total rollout, what if there are obstacles or problems there? Because I believe that piloting first would be the best option. On the identification of the distributor by SASA, when will that be done? And the identifying what instrument or mechanism are going to be using with SASA that will initiate the process of identifying the TV owning a household that qualifies for subsidy. And lastly, Chair, on the issue of the those who do not qualify must buy the set of boxes from the retail shops. Are they going to be competitive? I think it has to be the others in the market for it to be successful. Some incentives if you buy more than one set of box and all sorts of things cheaper than multi-choice and stuff like that. Thank you very much, Chair.
I just wanted to start off by saying thank you. Just explaining, and maybe I offended my colleagues when I said he was stupid. What I mean is he's not all as technically astute as the engineers that are presenting. In for instance, when Centred was presenting, and it's obvious people with qualifications that we don't all have. Jane, I want to just start by saying this is a massive rollout, and it has a real important role for the different entities. My concern is to what extent the DTPS, which is overseeing this, to what extent have you established a hand? implementation plans, deadlines, rollout, etc., with identifying the critical dates and then what should kick in thereafter. I'm not convinced that we're doing in the pre-announcement phase what should be done. So I have a concern, and I will come to some of the questions. For instance, I find it, maybe the department can explain to me, I find it very strange that we're saying on page 7 of the presentation, identification of the distributor by SAFA. Which distributor? Because it seems to me that SAFA is doing the distribution. That was the intention. So which distributor are we talking about? And that brings me to the role of SAFA. Chairperson, I have a concern because SAFA is fighting a survival battle because of declining government subsidies and efforts to sustain income and to operate on a business-like platform. Now, this massive administrative burden, I don't know if SAFA is really geared for it, and maybe they can explain to us, because sooner rather than later they will come back to us and request additional funding for this specific rollout. Who's going to pick up the tab? If USAFA is picking up the tab for the antennas and the STBs and training of all the installers, etc., who's picking up the tab for this massive administrative burden? Because to my estimation, it's only the taxman and maybe SAFA who have the capacity to really reach out. And this is going to be an operation of really significant proportion. So I'm concerned about that. Then I want to know if the DGPS has developed this comprehensive system. Now, it seems to me that there are entities that are operating in silos, and that's why I'm worried about the coordinating role of the department. Have you developed this very complex system? Because if I look at some of the drawings and the diagrams, it's really to see each entity's role. We must avoid uncertainty about each entity's specific role, and there should be service level agreements in terms of who's responsible. We can't have the ball being dropped somewhere, and then USAFA says, no, but it's SAFA, and SAFA says, no, but it's USAFA, etc. So when are we going to see that? And what is the department's role there? Has the Auditor General been requested to check, because we're working with funds that will have to be managed. The use of funds must be managed to the T. So how will those systems really correlate to make sure that the right beneficiaries obtain that, etc.? What is the department's role there? Then, we have a policy delay. But Chairperson, why can't the matter roll out? And some of the members have asked about that. In other countries, they have started the rollout of the public awareness campaign 2 years, 3 years before to create a hype for people to understand. Now, we understand that we, particularly those people who will not just have the money to go and buy a new set-up box somewhere, to extend the period of life of their TV. Some people can go and write out a check and they buy a new TV. Others can't. Now, those people must be reached, and I'm very concerned. We will have to have a massive rollout, schools and everywhere. Why can that not start already? And then, Chairperson, I think I'm on 4 or 5, but identifying the TV-owning household. It appears that SAFU has already estimated which of those are in which provinces and what they will require to make sure that their network corresponds to where the needs will be. But I'm concerned that the DGPS is saying on page, where on this page, was it on 9? One of their part of their presentation, they said that you sometimes will identify those who should qualify for the FT subject. But Chair, in all in all, there are many other detailed questions that I wanted to pose, but I understand the statistics. Thank you. Pardon? But that
thank you very much, honourable members. I think the comments and questions that have come through is just a reflection of the importance of what we are dealing with. And I think one of the things that must come through is the importance of the project and it being able to be delivered on time, because the consequences can be afforded not to. And I think members have really come up very strongly, especially on the issue of public awareness and public engagement. Because there's a huge lack of understanding out there. And one of the areas that has come through was a community in Northwest which believes that TV is coming to an end in 2015. Because of this lack of understanding what is happening and what is to happen, what are the implications, what is expected to be done. But again, part of what comes missing from this process, yes, we are talking about those that we must provide for. And there is a maybe it should come through the communication for those who can afford what is to be done, when are they supposed to start purchasing and all those things. Because that's what communication has come out. But another issue that which somebody has alleged that, you know, it's starting to be the trend is the manufacturers and the people or the retailers who are starting to dump the TVs now. Because others are already starting to incorporate what is expected to be done with the 2015 already, the gadgets, the TV sets, and those that the digital ones, those who are old methods or old type of TV sets, are being dumped to the public and to parents. And I think we have an obligation to protect South Africans. If that does not happen, and this is what is incorporated in a process where we need to communicate better as people who are working around the project. Nothing more important is to say, as South Africa, we can't afford, I mean, if we look at other countries, they are already ahead of us. Others have competed who do not even have a deadline of next year, which we chose to have a deadline of next year. So the critical issue is to say, how do we make sure that we meet the deadline, that we meet it in time, and we do not have problems? I think that's one of the issues. But secondly is to say, in light of what we need to do, because this, for me, affords us an opportunity, not only around this, I mean, it creates various, if what has been briefed on in terms of the ability of what this set of boxes can do teaching, the issues of network, if you put a SIM card, some of them would have be able to put a SIM card if we have internet within the house. I don't know what are the specs, what are we opting for? And therefore, those are some of the things that would come as better benefit, but even the issues of freeing the spectrum and all those things, which would assist, because we have to make sure that as part of what we are doing, to ensure that the line has to be made and we are fitting to the uncomfortability. We see the project time frames, the comfort from those who already are at 90% completed, really assured that we will be able to. I mean, I think Honourable McKenzie covered it. And so when you're sitting here, there's a level of comfort, whereas initially there was a really cringy point that we started fearing that we might be in a really, really disastrous point when we reach next year. But when you look at the entity's work, it shows that a lot of work has come into and has been done. And I think that needs to be recognized by the committee. But at least we seem to be on track. There's just one or two things that are showing as glitches. And I'm going to allow the teams to respond. I'll start with the teaching and allow, I think I would not say which one, but I know there were a number of questions that each and every presenter or entity would have picked up as they needed to respond to. Thanks.
So thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members, for the questions. I'll just take the ones that are more for the department and will allow CEO Trudeau to come in and assist. With regard to the policy footnote on my presentation, we did appeal to the committee for questions and allow that the minister should come, because the approval of the policy is a matter that has been managed by the minister, so as supported. What I would really appeal is would allow the minister to come back and brief the committee on this. Now, the issue of the 2010 and 2015 switch off in the individuality that we are not able to switch off the analog, it would be a matter that would address it with the regulator from a coordination point of view with our neighboring countries, because of the potential of interference, say for example for those spectrums that we would still be continuing to utilize from analog transmission, then another country could have been, let's say they've identified them, say for other services, whether it's broadband, those would be the potential things that the regulator would assist us with, and also including Centec from transmission. Like for example, one of the things that Centec is doing, the power levels of how on the digital transmitters, the power levels have been set to a lower level, and once the analog, which then would have a smaller coverage, and once the analog signal is switched off, the power levels will be increased to increase the coverage. So those will be the critical entities that would be assisting us. But I can report that as a department, we do attend a GSEC, it's a structure that is chaired by CASA on a monthly basis. It deals with some of these issues of what do we do post the switch off, and how do we deal with the fact that, let's for example, we are ready to switch off, we want to use the digital dividend for other things, and then maybe Zimbabwe is not ready. How then are we going to manage it? As an example. So, but I think both CEOs can come in and deal with it. With regard to the identification, when we talk about the identification, while we know that the agents or USASA, they have a broad parameters of how they would utilize the qualifying criteria. Like one of the issues is you need to be a South African, produce your IDs and all of that. And if you don't have some of these things, there is also a process of a person going to the police station to do an affidavit. But when we talk about identification, talk about a scenario, we get to the level where we say this household qualifies. Now we've got a criteria, we have an estimation, but we need to get to the point where we are saying in this community there are 20 households and these are the people, these are the ones who are qualifying. That's that level of detail to get to that point where we are then saying it's a matter that would be, as we roll out the project, those are the details that the agency will then deal with. When we analyze our project capacity, I think post April or early this year, we also looking at how we can force, we realize that it's actually also very difficult to get some of the capacity. We then entered into a very intense discussion with Centec, because we are aware that they are already coming to a point where they're ramping down their capacity in terms of the project management capability that they have, in terms of building up their own signal distribution. Centec is now providing us with the program management capacity. So we have like we've extended our capacity through Centec and through ISASA and also through the post office. Because some of the work that originally would have been done by the department, that the milestones, when is it delivered and all of that, that is the capacity that Centec has provided us through a number of people, but I think that the CEO can talk about it. So overall, we've got like a matrix approach of a project team that extends between us as the department and the agencies, because our view is that we don't have the necessary resources. But we also recognize that we need to actually work like it, because as a department, you can't have all the full capacity. You need to extend your capacity
through your agencies, because they are, after all, the implementing agencies on behalf of the department. The second issue that I would like to deal with is on the awareness here. Do you want to check the awareness so we can deal with the budget after we've spoken to the awareness?
Chairperson members and the PG. Around the awareness, we realize that communications is quite a very key and crucial aspect of the program. Over the past number of years, we have engaged in various forms of communication, ranging from newspaper adverts, from radio ads, and also taking pamphlets to communities when government goes and engages with the public. At this stage, we have spoken, working with the Department of Arts and Culture, we have translated the material for the marketing material around digital migration in all the official languages. So we have that it's one of the tools that we'll be using as we're rolling out as part of this massive communications, rather public awareness program. We are also going to be working very closely. In fact, we have already worked with the Department of Communication, specifically the GISA, to use their platform to talk to the community media. And we have also developed some products that will be able to run as soon as the policy has been finalized. So this is now looking into the future. In terms of how we're going to be funding the plan for specifically communication, most of what we're going to be doing would be to leverage existing resources and also working in close collaboration with the state and the agencies. And of course, we invite the public sector, to come and join us, and in fact, everyone else to come and join us as we communicate this very important program. Yeah, I think that just leave it at that.
On the budget of awareness, we've been allocated, I think it was around 20 to 140 million. Of course, some of that has already been used. We did raise our concern with Treasury overall with regard to the budget, not only on awareness. But the problem, you know that when Mustafa were presenting, they also raised a Treasury is aware of the shortfall. We are engaging them on how they can assist us with the shortfall. But one of the things that they've been emphasizing is that let's let the project start. And as you roll them out, then we can then start engaging. Because while we are experiencing delays, what then happens is that we end up having to ask for rollover. Like the money that has been allocated for such set-top boxes. We've been asking for all of us, and the good things that at least they've been kind in the sense that money has always been given the approval for the money to be rolled over. So I think that there is a commitment and support from Treasury, but they are just emphasizing that let's move, and as we move, we will then do the analysis and see where are the gaps and how then they can. Support us. I think let me just allow the CEOs to come in, then I'll come back again.
Is this to put some diagrams to just respond to a lot of questions I'm doing? Just to project some maps in answer to the questions.
No such thing, Madam Chair. Yeah, no such thing, Chair. To avoid a situation of fruitless expenditure, I'll ask some of my colleagues to also respond to some of the questions directed in that. Now, what a digital platform helps us to do is that there's a slide that we've built which looks at the three multipliers, and one of the slides talks to Maxwell with SABC, and of course 15% for your community. So that's one in common of communities and the poor council, because most of the efficiencies that come with it, they are able to license regional channels. In this instance, even the community channels can actually be and issues of language diversity and the cohesion can actually be addressed, and the local content finding its way onto the DDT platform. The second issue is that with regard to interferences, as the DG has indicated, we've got Jason that's dealing with the matter. But secondly, the level of the product is CASA. So CASA is a grouping of all regulators in the region that are dealing with the matter, so that there's no interference and overflow into various countries. So that matter is taken care of. So then I'll ask my neighbor to deal with one question, and Councillor Baji as well will also respond to the question on the consultation.
Thank you, Captain. Our digital migration regulation requires that the broadcast TV stations under SABC, ETV, and NNET apply to have whatever bouquet of channel they are planning to broadcast on the capacity in Marketplace 1 and 2 to be authorized by the authority. So we have put in place a procedure in the regulation where once they can do so from, if this has been possible from the passing of those regulations in 2012, they can come and approach the authority and request us to authorize the TV channels that they plan to broadcast on the marketplace. So it's really for them to indicate to that. And these are the new channels which they plan to broadcast. So for example, if SABC plans to launch an education and health channel, that would be the channel that they would request the organization for. If we find that there are controversial, let's put it that way, the public controversial channel, then we would have a public hearing on that channel and request the public to do a review on whether we should put them up on the channel or not. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. A question on the regional visit that we're planning. ICASA, as of 2013, we did a cost-benefit analysis with respect to local content into the future. As part of the cost-benefit analysis, the output that would be published, a discussion document that is looking at the cultural and the economic viability of the part of the broadcasters and the need of part of broadcasting of diverse content of South Africa. So we did a public discussion document. Now the next round is, could we take into account that the people that comment on our document are mainly our stakeholders? By our stakeholders in the broadcasting sense, it will be the public broadcaster, it will be the commercial broadcaster, the broadcasters, and no one really else will comment. So we're going to all 9 provinces, to different communities. We're meeting with independent producers, we're meeting with Department of Arts and Culture, PEN and SLAB. We'll be meeting with them both at regional level and at national level. We'll be meeting as well with the House of Traditional Leaders and communities. There are communities that are specialized. As an example, in the province of Northern Cape, we are going to be having a live broadcast of our workshop through a radio station called DNA Mark. So we also want to have everyone to participate at all levels of the community to what people want to see in terms of local production. That is what we'll be doing in all nine provinces. Shepherdson, thank you.
So, Chair, in addition to the stakeholders that will be meeting about this matter, is the DTI, they had commissioned, they had a commission chaired by French Parliament. There were issues that arose, so we'll have a discourse on the issues that arose from there, which have got a bearing on the work that was doing. Just to add that, I think it is a matter which the country has got to reflect on about the extent to which we still want to allow the space for analog TVs to be important in the country. And I think policymakers will have to take that through. The DTI probably must explore a possible moratorium on that particular question. And we need to fast track the finalization of technical specifications for IPTV so that we are able to inform our people beyond the antiquities of technology. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yusufa.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, there is a question around the how does the digital migration empower us poor people. First and foremost, the migration will allow poor people who ordinarily would not have had access to many channels to gain access to those channels. Secondly, the internet port that is coming with the set-top box allows poor people to be able to access, or to be easy for them to be able to access Wi-Fi services. At some stage. Thirdly, if you look at the target of installers, most of those installers that we're talking about are people that are coming from disadvantaged backgrounds. But instead of focusing on 200, we're looking at more than 2,000. Chair, we engaged with MITA together with UIF. Where they are proposing to put a certain amount of money to train these people through the SET colleges. These people will be trained, they will be registered on the database, and they will then be the ones that are doing the installation of the set-top boxes countrywide. Now, that in itself is a benefit. But again, if you go back and look at the manner in which the previous tender was structured, it emphasized local content, and it emphasized job creation, and that still remains, and our people are still going to benefit a lot on those kind of things. So those are the few that one can mention for now. The question around are we subsidizing foreigners or South Africans has already been answered in that when people go and make their applications at the post office, physically to be a South African identity document, whose ID number will be punched into the system, and the system will then be able to pick up that particular person is a South African or not. If the person is not a South African, then a different process will start. So that is the process that we are going to be using to make sure that we are able to see those that qualify and those that are not qualified. As well as people that are possess TV licenses. In terms of the SEP integration, SEP is a real-time system. Post office currently sitting on SEP, SEP is sitting on SEP, SAPC is sitting on SEP. It makes perfect sense for all of us to be sitting on one platform because it makes it easy for us to integrate. Why do we want to integrate? We want to integrate so that when an application is made at the post office, USASA, who is monitoring the min and the max in terms of stock level, is able to see that there is a demand from the post office side. Then it helps me to prepare for my ordering or not ordering. It therefore becomes important that we all sit on the same platform.
I happened in my previous life to have been in a fortunate position to implement SAP. The longer it takes for you to implement SAP depends on the size of the organization. It depends on the size of the users that you're going to be having. It depends on the modules that you want to implement. The critical modules for us that we want to implement for now are basically two modules. It is our SAP finance and it is the SAP logistics. And those then, the SAP finance and the logistics have to do with the ordering, the stock management, and the payment, and the purchase order, and all this kind of thing. But the total cost, the quotation that you received for the implementation of this is around 23 million rand. If we look at how we want to implement it, the time period that is going to take for us to implement this particular program, again, it won't take a year to implement these two modules. It will take about a month or two. But remember, when you implement SAP, you start first by defining your process flows. After defining your process flow, you then define your value chain. You take those value chains, you plug them into the system. Your servers are already there, then you are able then to start. Then you then have to train your people and make sure that they are able to have all the systems. So it should not take the number of years mentioned to implement the system itself. The question around the service provider. The particular reason why we want to move to this particular service provider is that when you analyze the people that are playing in the sector across the space, these are the types of people that would not take a no for an answer when they have not been awarded for one reason or the other. These are the type of people that will go out and want to challenge you. We want to make sure.
Sorry, Chief, sorry. Can I just have clarity here? Ask for clarity. Well, I actually don't know what he's explaining. That's why I want him to actually explain before he. I want clarity on what he's talking about before he takes time explaining something. Which service providers are you talking about here? Are you talking about the auditors, those kind of people?
Yeah. I've been following what they've been. There was a question to say, what are the service providers that you are, I think you asked, and one of McKinsey asked, I think another member asked, what are the service providers that you're going to get? You asked about the installer project cost, you have just given the project cost around 23 million. The SAP has been explaining the SAP. You've asked about the tender, the delivery chain, and you've asked about several issues that he's trying to explain there. Because I'm following what he's saying.
Thank you, Chair, but I'm not going to ask the question. I'd like clarity, please.
No, let's allow him to explain because I can.
Well, I'll ask him again in as a follow up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the service providers that we're using, particularly the ones that are going to do the help us with the evaluation, the service providers were all in the database, the user database that was open, that we go through an open bidding process. We're looking for a tier 4 service providers. Now, the tier 4 service providers are your Deloitte, your PwC, your Ernst & Young, and all those. I am unable to mention the specific name because the letter of appointment is only been issued today. But it is a tier 4. It's playing in the same space as your, it's one of the big four, basically. And the reason we go for these types of people is because of their, one, the knowledge that they have, two, it is the reputation that they have in the industry, and three, the ability and the technical ability for them to do this type of evaluation and assessment and that they've demonstrated to do in the past. We do know that if we use this type of people to do this type of assessment, the chances of us being challenged are very minimal because of the thoroughness of these particular people. So in the meeting that I had with the Auditor General on Monday, which was a closed-out meeting. This was tested with the Auditor General, and the Auditor General was quite comfortable with this particular process. On the meeting that we had with National Treasurer on the 21st of August, this particular process was also tested, and National Treasurer was quite comfortable with the process because it allows us clean governance. It allows us to be able to account and not be challenged unnecessarily. In terms of the cost of these people, they all came in under the threshold of 500,000, which is the 300, which is, was a three-code system. So it is under 500,000. How were they identified? I've already spoken about the process that they were used to identify. The total cost of the program, I'm unable to give the figure at this particular point in time, Chair, I can respond to it in writing at a later stage. There's a question that comes to say, how are we saying that, are we saying that people who are in grants should pay? Chair, earlier on we indicated our proposal, and our proposal is saying people that are earning from 0 to 1,500, we're proposing that we give them 100% subsidy. And we're proposing that, as the GGS indicated, that becomes the phase one of the project where we don't delay the project. If that is agreed upon, we run the particular project of going and implementing the project with these types of people. Why we go back and say the balance of the shortfall, we now start to source those funds, find the ways of sourcing those funds, but we start with the particular process, so we can't do it any better than that. How do we deal with the question of funding? The specification and evaluation criteria that are set out and the codes that are being determined by National Treasury are very clear on how to determine issues of funding. If properly implemented by the way that we want to do it, we would not have a problem of funding. What I like about this particular process is that we are now seeing many of our people, previously disadvantaged people now, participating in this particular space. Some of them even owning companies and factories that are manufacturing this at home here. So that is quite encouraging. The question around the commencement of the manufacturing of such policies, we are unable at this point in time to start with the procurement process until the policy has been concluded. Because if the policy comes and says open access, it means the status will change and therefore will not move in that instance. But from where we are sitting now, we are pretty much ready. If the policy comes and it gives the same type of status that we have, we are pretty much ready to move. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Another question of what we've been doing for the rally as well. Since our project, we've used the information from the census to identify the coverage in terms of rural and urban using some classification or the possible classification that is in the data. For example, we know that when we say that Limpopo is 100% covered now or it's complete, that 83% of the population of Limpopo is in rural areas and covered by the territorial network. I think the important thing about the territorial network for the rural areas is also that while somebody has an area, then they don't have to invest in anything else. I mean, the only thing that really has to change there is the set-top box. Sometimes the area may have to change, but it also does not have to change all the time. So we're quite aware and we of the split on our coverage between rural and urban. But then, just to emphasize that again, or illustrate the point that the social has mentioned now. The members you see in front there is the coverage of SABC in digital and in analog. So if you look at this map here, the first one and the third one, the blue areas represent, particularly around this area here, those areas, the only television that service that they have is SABC2, as we speak right now. And generally, these are rural areas, that we are using. In the digital environment, those same areas are going to get all the 15 to 18 SABC services. So in fact, every area that is currently can get any television channel will get all the SABC television services and SABC radio services at a minimum. And that's a very big benefit, I think, for the rural community, as you speak. And the other question was related to the issue of interference. As I mentioned earlier, first of all, the process really starts with the CASA doing providing the or doing the coordination with the regional regulators. But we have already identified, as I mentioned earlier, that which areas are potentially vulnerable to interference. There are 45 sites in the total of 178 existing sites. are potentially vulnerable, to the extent that there are the issues that can or are not resolved between the different regulators, let me know exactly where to go if any of the countries is switches off analog and they go fully digital and therefore potentially cause interference on the existing analog services. And the map that is there is the map of all the areas that are vulnerable. And we also know where the number of set-top boxes would be required to be able to facilitate quick action in those areas and then enable the analog signals to be switched off and then avoid the interference. Then the last issue, I think, is about the work support that you're providing to the or the work that we're working with the department on. Yes, we do working now with the department on the assistance with the program management. The program management accountability still lies with the department, but we are some of our resources to provide the services there. And I mean, again, use a lot of the data that we have generated in our rollout program to assist with a number of things, including, for example, the communication, the tactics for dealing with the issues that is in front of us right now. In addition, the department also has runs a satellite desk, which, among other things, deals with the coordination of DCT migration activities in the satellite region. And one of our, at least two of our people, regularly assist the department with those things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. Anton will start with the logistical operations and then I'll conclude.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question we had was how is SAPA going to control the number of needy households at ground level? As I indicated or explained before, we may use the sequential distribution number process. We also make provision in the SMS and notification to either inform them of the collection period that they have to come in that period of the month, and we can also break it further down to tell them on what specific day they have to come and collect the equipment. On grounds level itself, we can also implement dedicated counters, and we're also going to put a numbering system in place to deal effectively with the numbers. On the interruption to postal service, what contingency plans are in place? We're in the process to implement the basis contingency plans in each and every operational area. We have put a risk register in place to identify all possible risks that can go wrong, that we have the mitigation plans in place. As indicated before, it's a massive project, and we also in the process to see that we have resources that are available that can assist on the branches where the high volume is going to happen. In that case, we will assist the customers with the completion of the application forms. We will also put in maps of the areas that they can see in specific where the area is, so that there's a minimum failures on the SP top as possible. And yes, we have to make sure that those plans are in place. On the impact of the development of the SAPU step system, our system is fully implemented. All the applicable modules are in place. All that, as far as the DDP project is concerned, we can add additional products to the already 2,000 that we have. So from our side, we don't foresee anything that can go wrong there. On the how long does it take to process application, we have estimated it will take approximately 3 minutes, meaning that we will do 20 applications an hour or 160 per day per teller. The intention is there that we use the assistant staff to help the staff of the applicant with the preparation of the forms, meaning that they all the checking functionalities the ID, the verification, the income verification, as well as the functional ID verification is done upfront, so that the teller can only focus his time on the processing of the application. So we will then be able to bring the 3 minutes maybe down to 2 minutes per application. I think then the last one that is the one that is stopping here the, against the current challenges, I think this issue that the CEO is going to respond to.
Chairperson, honourable members, the view we hold when it comes to this project is the opposite of what could be a disaster factor. When we look at this project, we primarily focus on the capacity we have, spare capacity to utilize against this project, which then gave us a positive effect. Secondly, we took the advantage of this project to not overweigh our margins, but to optimistically look at what we can add to against the capacity we have. Further to that, look at what complementary processes are currently within the processes, so as we utilize our capacity better to enable us to actually use this going forward in a positive manner. Further to that, we view the movement of customers coming to pick and drop the set-up boxes as a positive one, because we can then expose them to the services and other services we processes to offer, which we believe that is a positive, will have yield a positive in terms of the vibrator processing as such. Thank you.
Those have been clarified, but maybe just to note that there was a question, I think it was Honourable Killian, on the service level agreement. We do, because of the risk and the complexity of the project, you cannot just leave things to the agreement. Also, the fact that you could have discussed with the project manager to put it along, that you cannot rely on the member in terms of what needs to be done. Like, for example, with regard to Misasa, we are on the in the final stages of entering into a memorandum of agreement that has already been done by the legal unit from our side, and Misasa. I think the matter is already at my level between myself and the CEO. Of course, because the CEO reports to the board, would then be, I think, from my engagement with the minister, finalization of that, so that you know, the board there are aware. You don't have a scenario where we enter into an agreement with the CEO, and then you can create the necessary governance challenges to the CEO and the board. So you just, I think we're in the stage of just finalizing the governance issues. And also from our side, also just we've been engaging National Treasury with regard to Centec. Because Centec already has got an existing call center, just to make sure that the legal requirements are attended to in whether there's a possibility of Centec expanding the call center. And our view is that it's about the economies of scale. Having one call center, it can economize the economies of scale. And that process will be concluded in the form of an MOU between ourselves and Centec. And of course, on the capacity that they're providing, those people, we need to account for the hours that they're spending on us. So all these, that they do require agreement to be entered into. Like, for example, the last engagement that I had with the CEO of ISASA, when we're talking about SAFA in particular, was also them also finalizing those agreements so that there is a record and there's paper trail of how things have evolved. What is important is observing the rules that are governing all of us as entities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, TG. Let's take, I hope we're going just to take members, or if there's a question that you feel that is not yet clarified properly, and just follow up questions. Last round of engagement. No question, you are tuition. Now we will follow Honorable Sotensi. Honorable Kiden.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask specifically the DG if there is a signed memorandum of understanding between the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Telecoms stating that Telecoms is the overall lead and coordinator of the digital migration program. Then I would also like to know, when the previous iteration of this committee, the Communications Committee, had a presentation, I think it was at the beginning of this year, on the status of this program. We're told that the tender for the manufacture of the boxes was going to be handled by DTI. Can we explain why it's now being handed over to USASA to manage the tender process? What is the reason for that? Can we also have some sort of timeline? What is the sort of revised timeline of when the digital migration is going to be complete and the spectrum made available for other uses? Then I'm also a bit concerned about USASA here, because in the same time frame as we're supposedly going to be rolling out the set-top boxes, we're also going to be connecting schools. These are two mammoth logistic projects. Does USASA or does the department have confidence that USASA has the skills to do this? Because I doubt it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. My question was not about the detail zone, everyone.
Question of time frame was not as good as you responded to, but hopefully, the same presentations will cover this. And the other one, I think people are coming for the first time here to a level, often ask about the time frame, the geographic location of what state you have done, either you have installed something or delivered some devices. It helps us when you do oversight, when you are able to understand exactly what state you have done, and also hold you accountable. But if you don't know where your first state is, one province or how many provinces you have done, it really frustrates in terms of some oversight. So we have given that in future presentations, please have your geographic location of the areas you have covered.
And the question is if we could just give a response. I didn't pick it up in the reply. If they respond to why was the indication given earlier that DTI would run the manufacturing process, if they could also indicate what is delaying the manufacturing of STD the print. Is there anything still outstanding from where we are? It seems that we haven't standards were approved, the necessary specifications are in place. What is delayed in the rollout? If we could get it understanding. There are some other issues, Jay, that I wanted to ask, but I don't think I think I'm engaged in it. It's just that in some countries what they had zones for the rollout, to make sure that it was a phased approach. It appears that we're not going to have that. It's going to be just anywhere inside that people will apply. Is that not putting the project at risk? I would have thought that where we have the potential of interference of neighboring countries should perhaps have been prioritized, but I don't know why the department and the team decide that anywhere is good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I start with USASA.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question asked was why USASA and not DTI. I think I'll request that the department answers that one. And then there was a question asked on the ability of USASA to deliver on DTT. School connectivity on any job that USASA has to do, if I'm understanding the question correctly. If USASA capable and are able to deliver all this work, can I very simply say, Jefferson and members, USASA is delivered. USASA is delivered.
No.
Can we be given a chance to deliver? There are checks and balances in place. The DG has alluded to some of those that are in place that USASA is. Because this is not a USASA standalone project. We know exactly what USASA has to do. The board is committed agreement signed over and above that, the confidentiality agreement that has been signed to make sure that you suffer in this process. The plea is, can you be given an opportunity to deliver and prove our work? The question asked on the delay, I think this was answered earlier, in the why are we not manufacturing now? USASA cannot place orders until the policy issues are cleared and completed. Because it would be unfair to, because the question would be, what would they manufacture on? So the policy letter has to be cleared and be concluded, and then we can move in.
Chair, in terms of USASA being able to handle this particular project, perhaps we didn't spend time on the value chain slide that shows different processes, different process flows from when the TV holder goes and applies at the post and determine the role that USASA is going to be playing in this particular process. Our role, Chairperson, is that of logistics. We don't go and install those things directly. We sit in the office, we have somebody that is looking at the statistics, we've got somebody that is monitoring the processes from the post office and is looking at the demand that is coming through. As and when the orders are going down, that particular person generates a purchase order to the network or to the manufacturer. When that order reaches the manufacturer goes and delivers to SAPO warehouses. When it gets to SAPO warehouses, SAPO receives it, they do the quality check, it reflects on our system. When it goes out to be installed, we want to see where did it go, and that is the role that we play. So we are not going to go and employ or do the physical installation. And the capacity to do that well is already in-house, we already have the capacity in the organization to do that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you, Chair. On the issue of DTI, Honorable Shema, I may want to check it because I don't recall ever coming to the committee. Maybe we may have to check the presentation. But DTI is the custodian of the industrial policy action plan on behalf of
sorry, can you speak up a bit?
They are the custodian for the industrial policy action. Of course, they are responsible for overall manufacturing strategy for South Africa. And they work with each sector in terms of what the manufacturing opportunities for that sector. What DTI has done, they've designated a set-top box for local manufacturing for us. We've been working with them throughout the process, up to the point where even the sector box has been designated. There is a designation, and it was either issued by DTI Treasury on the issue of sector box. We are working with them. They've been working with the potential manufacturers in terms of support, because they've got support mechanisms. But the process would be done by us, as in the ministry, of course, extension with the USASA. They are providing us with the necessary support. I think it may be just understanding the different role that they are playing on this process. From having been a custodian of having designated the sector box, like for example, in the clothing sector, they would, you know, they're doing all these different activities in every sector. Like for example, we are already engaging them on beyond the sector boxes. What else can we do in this sector? Because there are a number of areas that we believe that, you know, there's more that we can do in this sector. So that we are not just limited on this whole issue of the set-top box, but there's a lot that we can do. And with regard to the time frame, Honorable Chairperson, can I request that maybe we are allowed to, because we are limited by the number of slides, so that we have to keep our presentation precise, that we actually maybe we should just submit to the committee integrated project plan.
I think that concludes. Option. We still have a follow-up. Okay, last one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the issue, you are suffering on two and withdrawals.
Yeah, thank you. The DG just said something that caused a little bell to ring of alarm. You said the DTI is already working with potential manufacturers. Are you telling me that the potential manufacturers of the set-top boxes have already been identified? If so, how were they identified and will they get preferential treatment when it comes to the tender?
I was not referring to that they're working with manufacturers from a point of identifying. They're working in the sector to identify the potential. Before you can designate something, you need to understand what is the potential of the market. From that context of saying, we've analyzed the market, we believe that the potential of the market, there are these following things that we can do. If we can commit as a country or as a, which is what the DTI will say that, from your side, Rose, what we need is a commitment of what is it that you can do through your own programs. What we will do is create mechanisms in terms of the analysis that they do. So DTI will never get into the process. I don't even know who is going to be awarded. The CEO of ISASA does not know. It's a process that none of us know what's going to happen until the process is concluded, and a better can put on the court.
Thank you, maybe I understood the chairperson of yourself incorrectly, because I was looking at slide 6 of the department, where they said the commencement of the manufacturing of set-top boxes according to the approved FMD standard. Now, that tells me that there's already an approved FMD standard, specifications are in place, etc. So I don't understand, because I'm concerned, once the dual installation period kicks off, don't have set-up boxes in the manufacturing process, probably going to take several months before they are available. Are we delaying that process unnecessarily? And that is my concern. I understood that the chairperson saying they can't do anything until the policy has been finalized. Is that what you said? And then I'm very concerned.
I think, members, what comes, I'm just going to close that one on our I'm not going to allow it to be responded to, but I think what is coming out is that there is a need for a follow-up discussion around the matter and for the committee to constantly monitor this project. I think once the minister will have to interact and look at the space within our program and interact with the minister for him to come through, so that certain issues that are not especially around policy, around agency, that he can be available to be able to, as the minister and the accounting person, can be able to come and deal with them in the committee. I think that would assist more honourable members. That we would have to decide on a follow-up discussion around that. And then, why we noting that there's, that's why I said, when you look, there is progress that has been made. We have picked up where there are issues. We obviously, when we write, we also say to the minister, these are the areas that we need to deal with. And I'm hoping from the point of, as the teacher said, the point of the team, the project team as well, will start looking at what has been raised by members, so that by the time we come back we meet, we are able to close the gaps. Because I think a lot of work has been done to really push the matter of DTG, but there still niches that we need to tighten up and close up. I see your hand is up on option.
Yes, sorry, there just was a question that I asked that wasn't answered, if I can... It was whether there was a memorandum of understanding between the two communications ministers on who's in charge of DTT.
I think let's leave that as well for the minister, as the person, because I think he would have to come here, that's what I'm saying, even the policy issue that a lot of Kilian is saying. Let's put that aside, let's set aside time on our third term program. I think you give me that money to go and rework the third term program and look at a slot. Well, we'll come back and deal with this matter with the minister present. I think that would be the most appropriate thing. So that it's the minister that can talk about issues. I don't think it would be appropriate for the DG to start talking about ministers and the role and how cabinet is coming to cabinet, because that is a matter of cabinet, even the policy issue. It's a cabinet matter, and you need a cabinet member to come and speak on it. Is that okay? Okay. Thank you very much, members. I think thank you very much to the stakeholders, to everybody who's been here. Really appreciate the interactions and looking forward to continue working together and building those good relations. Thank you. Meetings adjourned.
So I was hoping to entertain you and drive around my big group.